It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
We're back, quarter number two of the Keystone Kickoff Show. Dustin Hawkinsmith, Jim Galante here talking about Penn State Memphis in the Cotton Bowl, coming to you from our usual spot in the Labatt Blue studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. We left off just talking about the running game. Obviously a huge story in this game. Penn State 396 yards, no matter who they put in there, no matter what the play call was, unless it was on fourth down, of course, they seemed to dial up a winner in this game. And 53 carries to 20 pass plays. You saw as the game, you know, first quarter progresses, and you saw Penn State's approach shift to really using that advantage. And to me, it just felt like a pretty prime example of the difference between a Big Ten or a Power Five program and an American Athletic Conference program, where I think, and there were some stories in this game on the Memphis side of a kid, you know, who was getting a lot of recruiting attention, hurts his knee his senior year. KJ Hamler is a good example of that. Not as dire, because a lot of his offers still stood, but you get a wide receiver, hurts his knee, and Memphis is the only one who stands there and takes the risk on him. You can get some success stories at the skill positions. You can cultivate speed and things like that. There's just no way to replicate getting big, strong, athletic, nasty dudes in the trenches. And that's what the Power Five programs are able to do. And that's where your advantage should be in a game like this. All credit to Memphis for being able to do what they do and dial up, you know, in the passing game and execute and all that. But when it came down to it, this should be an area where Penn State had an advantage. I don't know if I anticipated this big of an advantage up front in the run blocking game. They couldn't pass block anybody, but they were clearing the way in the run game. And this was a sense of, you know, I feel like you or I could have been calling the plays and recognized, you know, we've got a big advantage here. And they took advantage of it. 396 yards kind of speaks for itself, but it just spoke to me, you know, where Group of Five versus Power Five, you know, where the difference lies.
And you're exactly right, and that's where it hits. Even if you watched LSU-Oklahoma, there was that kind of disparity, you know, up front between those teams. So if you think a Group of Five team can keep up in the trenches, well, as you said, we saw an example of it there. And I know that we as fans, call the running play. How could you not? But I don't think you go into this game thinking it's going to be that easy. Just call the running play. No matter who we put in there, it's going to be 10, 20, 30 yards at a time. And so I'll not get on the play calling too much for that, because it did seem, all right, 50 rushes versus 20 passing plays. They got there.
They did get there. They did get there eventually. And, you know, I think James Franklin spoke earlier this year when it came to play calling about what you're trying to accomplish early in the game. And yes, in the short term, you're trying to score every drive. But at the same time, you're trying to get different looks from the opponent to see what they're going to do in certain personnel packages, certain play calls, how they're going to defend the pass, how they're going to defend the run. So there was probably some of that too, where it was, you know, A, probably scripted out beforehand, you know, the first X number of plays, what they were going to do. And there was some fact finding that was being done. And I think it was easy to lose patience because they were not having a lot of success in the passing game. But I think that was probably preordained that they were going to do it that way.
And there were also a few other things going on. I don't think Sean Clifford started the game well.
He still gets so jumpy, man. He comes out so excited. The things that they love about him kind of get him a little bit. He's a little wound tight and it's been that way. Like, obviously week one, as the year went on, I thought it subsided a little bit, but I think there are still some situations where he's a little too amped up.
And I think after being out the second half against Ohio State, missing the Rutgers game, then waiting another 4 weeks to get back on the field, I don't think any of us who've been watching him for this full season was surprised he was a bit amped up. And it also didn't help him, those couple drops Daniel George. Didn't help the cause. But when you can run the ball the way they did, you just keep doing it until they stop it. And it was very impressive to see Ricky Slade. I want to give him a shout out. Here's a guy, if anyone, who should have been a bit depressed by the way this season has played out. And he comes into the game, not only the big run, but he had a couple other very nice runs. It's great to see. And Noah Kane is absolutely everything we thought he could be. He runs hard also. Just you didn't have a drop off. We compliment Journey Brown, but there was no drop off when Noah Kane came in the game.
Yeah. I mean, the difference is sometimes Journey Brown can maybe turn into 60. Noah Kane's going to turn into 20, you know, and that's been the trade off from the get go. Everybody knows what the trade off is. He doesn't have, you know, pull away from safety speed. Not a lot of people have Journey Brown speed in the first place, but the physicality and just his instinct for the position, you know, he's got a pretty mature approach to running it.
But he will also, as everyone says, he'll turn 2 yards into 4 or 5 yards.
Better than any of these guys.
Let me ask you a question. Dustin, how can you, in good conscience, go a segment and a half talking about the Cotton Bowl and have yet to mention Micah Parsons?
We collectively have done that. I had been wondering that myself.
So following your lead, so I'm putting it on you, Dustin.
That's the worst thing you could possibly do. But yeah, I think from a just overall defensively, for Memphis to have to settle for 6 field goals, you know, and for Penn State to do a lot of bending, and they did in situations they didn't break, and that's credit to them too. That's something that they kind of pride themselves on. But as we got further into this game, Micah Parsons making play after play after play after play. You know, the final numbers: 14 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, both of which cost, I'll call them fumbles. The Garrett Taylor, the ball
that was Micah's play.
Yes, that was and it went down as an interception. But he also heard the quarterback one more time. He broke up 2 passes. So he was quite literally everywhere in this game. And all the things that Micah Parsons has shown, maybe at times here and there, he's been everywhere. He's been sideline to sideline. He's always been that. But the game wrecker stuff, you know, he's shown bits and pieces of that. And he almost came back for the season. He's got 14 tackles for loss. That was one shy of Yetur Gross-Matos. He almost came on late and led the team in that category. But that's the next level for Micah. And there were plays where he's the only player in the country who I feel like could have made him.
And it looks like it's not just Micah. It's Brent Pry looks like he's finding ways to blitz him, use him in a way that he can disrupt a game, change a game. But for me, the most impressive thing, obviously, when he makes the big play, forces the interception, touchdown, that was the biggest play of the game. But watching him, you use the expression sideline to sideline. You watch a play going, and then all of a sudden it's like a rocket just flies across the field and makes the tackle, and it's always Micah. You know, you look who was it that did? It's Parsons every time. Phenomenal. Can't wait. Already, as a fan, I'm thinking about what he's going to do next season. He was spectacular.
And there are a lot of with Micah. There are a lot of kind of hidden yardage plays too. Like the things that jump off the page in this game were all the times where the ball came loose, he's making a play behind the line of scrimmage, but also those, like, it's 2nd and 5 and, you know, they're set up, they have numbers on the edge, for example, they're set up that should be an 8-yard run, stopping it at 4, and now you're in a 3rd down situation. There are plays that sometimes as the game's going on, you don't appreciate them as much as you should, because you're like, oh, that's a 4-yard run, you know, like, why couldn't we make a play? But Micah Parsons makes those plays a lot of times, and football, it's a game of execution, and forcing the opponent to execute one more time is a gift in itself. And Micah Parsons has a way of doing that. I think it's still yet a little bit underappreciated. It finishes the year with 109 tackles. The number of times where the other team should have gotten eight and they got five, or the other team should have gotten eight, they got six, because Micah Parsons made a play that you probably shouldn't make as a linebacker. That he was able to accelerate through a gap in the protection or a gap in the blocking. And so there's all kinds of other plays that Micah has made this year that have been big plays that just ended up being positive gains for the other team.
Oh, definitely. And the only thing he hasn't done is gotten the interception. And close, I understand that some of his teammates are even making fun of him, teasing him about that. And so that maybe that's the next step for him. But it also, and now I'll turn the negative a little bit, he played so well, it made it all the more obvious the missed tackles on this defense, where you talked about, you know, what could have been an 8 to 10 yard play only being 4 yards because of the play that Parsons made. How often was it, though, the reverse, where someone, they missed a tackle?
Yeah.
And that's scary. And again, nothing against Memphis, a very good team, but it's still a group of five team. What would happen if you miss those tackles against those elite teams, those top five teams? You're not going to get away with it like that.
And there are a lot of times where these short slants and stuff, it felt like Minnesota. It felt like the Minnesota game all over again in some of those respects. Getting the ball out quick and being in a position where nobody's right there. Everybody, if you're trying to make a one-on-one tackle in the open field, there's a five-yard cushion. And, I mean, a lot of really talented ball carriers are going to be able to make plays in that situation. But a lot of games that are, frankly, and we're not telling anybody some stuff they don't already know, but, you know, missed tackles and situations where there's just way too much cushion. There's way too much room to run. And I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'm not watching the game with a knowledgeable enough lens sometimes to understand. All right. Should Garrett Taylor have been tighter, or is the scheme creating that pocket there? Well, I don't know.
But I think you can look at the long play where Reed was the only one in the frame. It was his guy, and he just lost him.
Yeah.
And just wandered away from him.
Might have expected coverage over the top. Might have expected help. I don't really know. It might have been a lapse. Maybe his eyes got caught in the backfield, and he just kind of got zoned in on that. But there's stuff like the issues that we're talking about are multiple. You know,
and not new.
And not new. And it's something that we're looking for Penn State to solve as soon as possible. We're going to move on for now. We're still talking Cotton Bowl, taking a quick break. We'll be back after this.
Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light want to remind you that fall is the best season. Why? Because of football. Leaves. Fantasy football. Flannel. Beards. Tailgating. Oh, yeah. And more football. Welcome to the best season ever. Grab some Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Because it's time to get undomesticated. Beer. Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Hey, it's Ross Tucker, former NFL player and now host on the Keystone Sports Network, telling you about GoPSURV.com. I had an unbelievable experience for the Wisconsin game with my wife. My father-in-law came up. We had an absolute blast tailgating at GoPSURV.com. If you don't know about it or you haven't checked it out yet, you need to do so immediately. Call Mark at 1-800-519-8467 or go to GoPSURV.com.
Looking for the perfect Christmas gift for the Penn State fan in your life? Then you have to go to 409tailgateclub.com and check out the Tailgate Christmas Gift Box, filled with their famous sauces and rubs and even a Tailgate Club apron, all in a gift box shipped directly to you. And for a 10% discount, be sure to use code KSN on checkout. That's 409tailgateclub.com, and don't forget to use the code KSN on checkout for a 10% discount.